Well, here we are. I think this is now day three without Carrie co-hosting, and boy, do I miss her, because I always, you know, I always value all that she does, but it means I have to push all the buttons, think all the things, remember all the parts, and say all my bad jokes without Carrie correcting my bad jokes. So it's terrible. So welcome to the Backpack Show. It's a business show where we try to bring you success and insights from unusual places. I have two incredible guests today. I always love saying that. You know why? Because what's that mean? Yesterday wasn't. I had two not so bad guests yesterday, but today's ones are good. I have Gracie Harkema, and she's going to talk to us about diversity and inclusion. We're going to talk about all the things we need to know about that. But get this, I have Kyle Yelmseth, and we're going to talk about diversity and inclusion, but from a whole different angle. We're going to talk about talent and his institution and all that. So we are going to be schooled on how to be helpful, how to be better allies, and all that. Let's see. I would like to say hello to my beautiful mom, Diane. I was saying to Kyle, Kyle's in Los Angeles, and Gracie's in Michigan, and I was saying that, Kyle, don't worry. My mom and dad are here to feel your pain. So mom's in Vegas. My dad's in Vegas. Chloe's in Scotland. It's 3 p.m. If you are here and this is the first time you've shown up at the Backpack Show, make sure you say hi in the comments. It's like Fight Club. If I don't know you're here, I don't know you're here. It's, you know, we need to have you fight. So Chip's here. Might as well start the show. We can do some things, right? So it's all about inclusion, diversity, what's out there, stories from two amazingly smart people.
Hi, everyone. Tim Kitzer from NBA Jam and NFL Blitz, welcoming you to The Backpack Show. Your hosts, Chris Brogan, Kerry Gorgone, Boom Shakalaka.
Backpack Show.
So every, I have this, so as a professional speaker, as somebody who makes a live show and all that, I have this panic when I go live. If my phone buzzes, I am sure someone's going to say, there's like a booger hanging out of your nose, or something bad's happened, or something. So Gracie just posted an Instagram story saying, hey, I'm here. Come watch me. And I was sure it was going to be something bad. So I'm like looking at my phone instead of, you know, getting ready for my cue. So Leslie's here. Chip says it's not my first time, so he doesn't have to fight. Look, right before I grab Gracie, I'm going to read a couple of my ads. I'm going to try to mix and match them a little bit so we don't feel like we have to read them all at one time. This is always what Carrie tells me to do. You want to run a show like this, you've got to find your own diversity and inclusion experts, but you just need StreamYard. cbrogan.me/StreamYard. Get that thing done. I always have to remember I got to change that graphic just that tiny bit so it's not mushed by my logo. Let's see. What other one do I want to do? PubSite. We're sponsored by PubSite. It's a site for authors. So when Gracie gets that next book published and she's ready to go, she wants to just throw up a really quick website for authors. PubSite, pub-site.com. Totally free for 14 days. But you know on your 13 and a half day, you haven't done anything. It's only $19.99 a month after that. And if you want someone else to build the site for you, it only takes a couple hours to build. It's super fast. But if you decide that's above your pay grade, $499 later, you'll be all set. Or give me $2,000. I'll pay him $4.99 and we'll have an incredible site. It'll be great. pub-site.com. I'm going to grab Gracie first. We're going to start talking a little bit about what's going on in the world. Is it a busier time or a less busy time now, Gracie? What's going on out there?
Hey, Chris, thanks so much. It's a crazy busy time right now.
I feel like the issues have been around for well past 400 years just in the States, but I feel like last June was the first time everyone kind of got back into the mood to talk about it, or the mood not to talk about it, but they were going to anyway, around George Floyd, around Breonna Taylor, around, there's just like, the hits kept on coming in the worst of ways. Has your business been like nuts since then? And what's that like? How do people engage you?
It really has been nuts. You know, it's interesting at the start. So a year ago at the start of the pandemic, I had a lot of companies cancel trainings that they had booked and said, we don't have budget for diversity anymore. Now that this pandemic has occurred, we're going to put a backseat on that. And then when, you know, Ahmaud Arbery, his killing happened, and then George Floyd's murder and Breonna Taylor, then suddenly all of those companies came back saying, we need help. You know, I think, yes, to your point, we have had these injustices and discrimination for 400 years, but for some reason, when people saw it on TV during primetime, the majority of the country suddenly realized, oh, racism exists, and you know, we need to respond to this and do something about it.
It's an interesting time. Right before this all went down, I read White Fragility. Finally, somebody told me about this book, Robin D'Agostino, and I was like, okay, I'll read the book. Absolutely, for sure, in my head, like, oh, I'm not that racist. Not that I could think of. I'm sure everyone's a little bit racist. And I get to the end of the book, I'm like, oh my gosh, oh no. You know, I've got so much work to do. I've got to be an ally. A lot of people don't sit still and read a book like White Fragility, and not like the other 8 books that you probably could recommend. What's the first step? Is it, I mean, for you, a lot, you get brought into company. So is it just that they're sort of at their like company appointed class with you? And how does it, how do you get someone over that hump of I'm not racist to, oh wow, there's a lot I could do to be helpful?
You know, what's really important is to realize that we all have a part in being a part of the solution. We all have a responsibility to be a part of the solution. And when we can get over the blaming, when we can get over the pointing fingers of, well, this only happened because they did this, when we can take our own ownership and realize that we have a part in increasing equity and inclusion in our environments, that's what makes the organization more successful and more safe and equitable, knowing that we all have a part in this.
It's interesting this time around how companies are really setting up against it or not. And we could say a lot of bad things about how people just sort of cookie cuttered that black and white logo phase that happened not too long after George Floyd, where all of a sudden there were all these statements made on black backgrounds with a little white logo and, oh, did it, we checked our box. Meanwhile, Nike says we're going all in with Colin Kaepernick. Like, we're going to invest millions of dollars because we think that we want this to really represent our brand. And so then there's suddenly this battle in the shoe aisle, basically. And by the way, they reported really great sales. The sales went up intensely. So enough people wanted to support Nike and Kaepernick, or at least still felt brand loyal to do that. Where do you think the next battlefield is going to be? I hope it's not the shoe aisle, but like, where are we going to get the chance to even leverage more people to this? Where are we going to make it even more normalized that more people should be allies?
Yeah, good question. I think we're starting to see that. And to your point, yeah, I hope that people now are past the, okay, we made a social media statement. I hope that they're starting to invest in the communities that they're serving, be more involved, build intentional relationships. And also, you know, put dollars towards building that equity as well, dollars into the community, dollars in terms of building up underrepresented and marginalized communities and supporting businesses that are owned by people of color and, you know, various minority owned businesses. I think now, you know, it was so trendy to do something on social media that consumers and the public are now wanting to see actual action and to see steps towards, you know, what does equity mean for that organization? Or what does equity mean for you as an individual? So I'm hopeful that we're going to see that increase, that it takes all of us to be an ally in order to make a difference.
All right. I have to pause and kind of go 90 degrees here. Cause who's that?
Oh, that's my puppy. His name is Teddy.
Teddy. Teddy looking Teddy. Oh my gosh. That's a crazy dog. I mean, I'm sitting here, we're trying to talk very serious things. This is very important. I'm like, oh, look at the dog.
He's pretty cute. Yes. He's my rock. Definitely.
Look at you getting some press. The question I want to ask about too, is that when we kind of, you talk, well, one example was you talked about, for instance, buying from black owned businesses, making sure that people of color are brought into all the decision making. There's another trend that I find kind of poopy that I want to know your take on, which is the whole chief diversity officer thing. I feel you know, that there's an opportunity for that to be a thing, but a lot of times it just doesn't feel like that. It feels like sort of the, you know, the kiddie table at the CEO's office or something like that. What's your take on it? And what do you think it's going to take to make that mean something?
Totally. I'm a firm believer that the change has to happen from the top. So before I started my own business, I was a diversity and inclusion director at a large global company. And I believe that they looked at my position as the fix-all, like, oh, it's okay, we have someone in charge of diversity, everything is fine. Meanwhile, they were ignoring, you know, the racist behaviors that was happening in their own organization. because the work wasn't prioritized from the top down. It wasn't prioritized at an executive level. And the work can't fall on the responsibility of one person to be the Band-Aid of a solution, because that's not a solution. What we need is infiltration from the top across the board.
It's a culture solve. You know what I mean? It's not a checkbox. It's a culture thing. So people have to understand all the way through that there's a vital, you know, connected nature to this sort of a thing. Kyle says backstage, I'm throwing in amens.
Yeah. Yes, Kyle.
It's by total happenstance, we have two total conversations about diversity and inclusion today. I think about this all the time because I think about the fact that on the one side, we see products come out. For instance, you know, there's the blackface dolls that I forget whichever awful company was made these dolls that when you looked at them, you're like, who said this was okay? Like, who passed this? Clearly not a single person of color in that room. So that's a thing. But I guess what I'm wondering is, how does it become so ingrained in a company that it almost doesn't have to be, and that's a weird thing to think about, like a chief diversity officer. How does it become just so part of the system that you give a business their sort of checkbox that they're doing it the right way? What would that look like to you?
Then it has to be a part of the foundation and the business model of the company, not an add-on. So much of what we've seen is this, this is our business. And then also we're going to do a little bit of diversity and inclusion on the side. No, diversity and inclusion needs to be built in from the beginning. Or if it's not from the beginning, it needs to at least be built into the model where our services, the communities that we're serving, our customers, our audiences are completely being served and ingrained in a diverse way built upon through intentionality. It isn't just going to happen on its own randomly. We have to put in the work. And that's the thing about work is it takes work. And then also ensuring that we have adequate representation. And when we don't have representation, we're doing a check of ourselves of who is missing, whose voice isn't being heard, and ensure to include those voices.
To that point, for instance, this most recent United States election that we'd all love to be all done with last November, Georgia, and most specifically Stacey Abrams, changed it. And on one hand, you have to imagine that the history books are going to clearly have that chapter. Stacey Abrams changed the face of politics in the United States. But we both probably feel like it's not going to be in that book. When does it just become a built-in, or how do we make it a built-in? So you said, for instance, it has to be core to the mission, and it can't be an add-on. But like, I guess to me, that was one of the first times you could really easily lay out, here's what systemic racism looks like. Here's what the ballots locked down looks like, you know, et cetera. What do we do with those events going forward? How do we make this history way more prevalent?
To keep talking about it and having conversations like this, I think it's so easy for people who don't feel comfortable having those conversations to just ignore it and to be silent. And we can't be silent anymore. You know, our silence is violence. And, you know, Dr. Martin Luther King talks about the moment that we stop talking about the things that matters, the moment that, you know, we're done. And so we need to continue having these conversations, having these dialogues. And I'm sure there might be some people on this that are like, oh, well, I'm sick of talking about diversity. Well, hey, we are too, but we need to keep talking about it until we have achieved true equity and true equality.
I have one last question, and then I'll drag Kyle out here and all that. But I want to know, we talk a lot lately about decolonizing the bookshelf, and I've seen some great examples of that, and I feel like I haven't seen enough examples of that. What books haven't I read that I should have read, or what books do we have to kind of turn back on? And speaking of Dr. King, I mean, his daughter just yesterday was saying, you know, I hate every one of these arguments that talks about our founding fathers, because she said our founding fathers kept me as a slave. Like, right. What their wishes don't matter anymore because it doesn't match the modern America. Maybe let's stop talking about our founding fathers so much. Exactly. To that point, let's talk history books and stuff like that. Let's talk not history books, but culture books. What needs to be there? What's the steady diet of somebody who's going to grow up a lot more willing to be an ally?
Yeah. A really great one I highly recommend is How to Be an Anti-Racist. That's huge. It's number one. At least it's been on the top 10 in the New York Times bestselling list for quite a while. One that I just started reading this week is Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Man by Emmanuel Echo. I highly recommend it. It's awesome. Yes, How to Be an Anti-Racist, definitely great one to read. And Uncomfortable Conversations with a Black Man. It's awesome. Emmanuel Echo is a former NFL player, and he's just real. And his demeanor is very kind. And one thing that I love about him and that he talks about in his interviews is how to have grace. And I think that's extremely important, especially as a person of color. You know, we are exhausted. We are sick of talking about our trauma over and over and over. But one thing that's really important that we need to keep sight of is having grace with people. We can't be angry about people that don't get it. And I know it's frustrating, and probably, you know, people that heard me say that are like, what? But I'm so angry about it. We need to have grace with people so that they get it. And that when they get it, that they will be allies, and that we will have unity instead of more division, because division doesn't help anything. We are stronger together.
Much stronger together. It's a pleasure to talk to you about this. One thing I want to end on too, before I put you backstage for a minute, and I'll bring you back for a panel, so don't go anywhere. One of the things that I always hear is, you know, it's not Black people's job to educate white people. It's white people's job to go and get the information. You know, you're not free school teachers laying around eagerly awaiting to teach diversity and inclusion. That's your job, that you're a consultant. You do that for businesses. So, you know, not only are people looking for you for free advice, but like that's your means of income. That's like asking, you know, hairdressers to cut your hair for nothing. So it's important. It's important that people understand that this is their job. Deb has a comment. She says that change takes time. It's not reasonable to expect change overnight. So continued dialogue and not just fluffy conversations. There's got to be a culture shift. So our favorite Deb.
Amen, Deb. Amen, Deb.
Gracie, stick around if you can, and we'll bring you back in a bit. But boop, you're backstage. Kyle, I'm going to grab you in a second. I'm just going to read the last couple of my ads so that I can, you know, satisfy the love and will and goodness of my sponsors. If you find me that unattractive, you could just listen to the podcast. That's not such a bad deal. Go to anywhere there's a podcast, and you could go to iTunes, Spotify, any of those places. Stitcher is my favorite, and we're hosted by Castos. So if you want to run your own podcast, I'll tell you, this is stupid easy. Castos.com. It's inexpensive. You can throw your podcast up there super lickety split easy. If you want a .online domain, and really who wouldn't, you could go to cbrogan.me/online. You can get a .online domain for 99 cents if you use the code Chris, all caps, C-H-R-A-S, 99 cents for a year. So buy a domain for 99 cents. So all you would-be domainers out there, just realize that you're, you know, horrible idea. It will only cost you a buck if you stick with me. All right. I am going to grab Kyle Yumseth, and we're going to talk about this from another whole perspective. Kyle, who'da thunk it? How are you doing? And what's welcome up, from all the way over there in the Los Angeleses of the world.
I know. What a day. What a morning. Gracie was just blowing my mind. I'm over here like sitting clap, clap, clap and throwing amens, as you know.
So now you run GMB, which houses, amongst other things, the College of Influence and the Normalize Equality Initiative. You've got quite a story for how you got here and what made you go down this road. Why don't you catch us up, make us smarter?
Super random, and you know, I'm trying to make it very quick. But essentially, so I own one of the biggest talent management agencies in the U.S. When it comes to digital influencers, and I feel like influencer is kind of a term everybody sort of understands today, at least in a little bit. But last summer, after the murder of George Floyd, in my particular camp, there was this question of how do influencers, how do digital talent, these people that are out there sharing their lives every day, doing sponsorships with, you know, all sorts of brands across the spectrum, how did they react to something that was so viscerally seen on digital media by so many people? You know, how did they get on the conversation? And I felt just as a agency owner, I had to provide answers for my staff and for all of these, you know, incredible talents that we're managing, helping them figure out how to get through this, how to talk about it with their online communities. That's where Normalize Equality came from, is, you know, just kind of in a little think tank group within my circle. How do we provide some answers and direction for people? I'm a minority business owner myself. And it just so happened that during this same block of time, I got randomly connected to my Black family that I did not grow up knowing, who happened to be in Michigan, where Gracie's at. So I was like,
small planet, right?
Yeah, but you know, so I have this really crazy, you know, backstory of not knowing a whole half of my family, finding them right during this time of this kind of like great awakening after in the wake of Ahmaud Arbery and Breonna Taylor and George Floyd, and then just trying to understand my own piece of the puzzle when it comes to my heritage, my ethnic background.
And this was last year, you said.
This is all last year.
We're all worried about, like, just don't get germs.
And we're all worried about COVID and not getting germs. And at the same time, one more layer to throw in there, my wife. So I'm part Black, Native American, and German, Scottish, and Irish. It's a little soup. My wife is Chinese. We have a 2-year-old who's all of that together. And so, you know, we're dealing with all of that. We're dealing with COVID. We're dealing with the rise in anti-Asian sentiment across the United States. So it's been fun.
Just all of it, really?
Yeah, it's just...
I'll just take them all, thanks.
You know, pour some more cream.
And you know, on top of running an agency in a time of woe, where suddenly in person everything is gone,
right?
And you know, I know you do a lot of influencer work, so maybe a lot of that is still just happy and Instagrammy. But like, at the same time, though, your talent of color is going through a lot, and right, not necessarily just eager to have arguments about, you know, did they or didn't they hold up the Pringles can the right way,
right?
What was last year like? I mean, you sketched that, but emotionally, what was that like to walk through that many pieces?
You know, emotionally, it was interesting. I think, you know, to my benefit, I have a really diverse stable of talent that we manage. You know, we've been diverse since day one, and I think that's just inherent because I'm a diverse individual. My first talent was a minority, you know, from a minority group. So we really didn't think about having to catch up to this equation of making our firm more diverse or our talent roster. We saw a lot of other agencies going through these pitfalls and being called out for, you know, being too ethnocentric or white centric. So for me, it was kind of like, okay, we're here, you know, at least we're not having to like fend people off and our building is not being burned down because we're too white. But how do we, to your point, like the emotional toll for me, for my family, for our roster, for our staff, like it was really about not trying to overwhelm everybody, but draw them into the conversation. We have a lot of white talent, and I am really thankful for our white talent because they actually jumped in and were some of the first people to say, hey, I want to be a part, I want to learn something. And not that I had to teach them, but they were sharing their learnings out there, sharing their point of view in the days following George Floyd, and really being, you know, like a support to us as an agency and to the rest of the talent that do come from diverse backgrounds. And then giving the platform for a lot of our, you know, our minority talent, our BIPOC talent to be able to have whatever they wanted to say or not say, you know, not saying
right,
like...
Right.
Not being like, hey, you know, Brittany, I want to drag you into this conversation, even though you're probably tired of this conversation. You know, there was a few people that wanted to speak up, and we found different ways to include them in our press activities and whatnot as we started to especially move Normalize Equality out there, like get things written down and strategies in place. And then there was a lot of people who were just like, hey, we're going to give you space. We're going to tell some of your brand partners that we need to take a break, and we're gonna, you know, put some of the stuff you're working on hold for a couple of weeks until we all feel emotionally cool, where we can get back into the work, you know. So it's creating space for people in the way that they really need to create or have that space.
It's an incredible sort of experience to imagine all of the gymnastics it takes to do that, you know, the talent representation, the white people want to say what they want to say, and they want to pitch in the way they do. The people of color want to do it their way. Chinese wife. I mean, there's so many juggling pieces to that conversation. And what I kind of smirked when you said that, you know, how did they want to how your BIPOC talent wanted to interact? Because to your point, and it's not even a funny truth, but like they were burning down businesses because they weren't Black owned and whatnot. And it was this sort of weird almost feeling of like, no, we have some Black people. And it, like, I saw some of that out there too, almost like pageantry. Like, no, we work with people of color.
Pageantry was very thick. There's a great meme from last year that was really representative of our space in digital marketing and influencers. And it was just a bunch of white face emojis. And then of course, like the few days after George Floyd, then boom, Black face emoji. Like, you know, these are all of our grid posts, and then boop, okay, we just insert, you know, BIPOC person to show that
we know some.
Yeah, we know some, and there was, you know, some interesting like positive consequence to that. I think I always like to look at the positives. There was a lot of just like, we don't know what we're doing. I had a lot of brands reach out to me and ask for my opinions and you know, just like a little leadership from our group to help them figure out how to step into this the right way. And so now in that time since last summer, I've seen so many brands we work with. I mean, I don't even think that I can look back and say that a brand is like misstepping more now or has really, you know, slid back into their old ways, because they're just now they know they're going to get called out. So the amount of inclusion in all of these campaigns that maybe wasn't there before has just completely flopped. And like we see, or flip flopped, and we see, you know, such diverse faces across these campaigns that we're putting our talent into. And that's really what we wanted to see, and probably, you know, it's what should have been there from the start, but I'm seeing the results of those conversations, and it's a really positive thing.
There certainly was a massive shift in clip art, let's say. There was the racially diverse woman with a reasonable afro seemed to be like an icon, you know, reasonable afro being one of my favorite parts of the phrasing, because it would be socially acceptable. Right. Meanwhile, there had been arguments all along about whether or not people could keep their dreads or whether or not people could wear their hair, you know, in a way that was appropriate to their culture versus the prevailing, you know what mm-hmm. I mean? So it was like advertising was telling one story and people were telling another story. And so here you are representing real people that are trying to represent an authentic interaction with brands.
Right.
You're at it a whole other way. I want to take a small 90-degree turn because I know I got to ask Gracie some questions. We got to bring you both in for – I know you both are going to want to go after this in two different ways. So, but I do want to ask just about, you know, running this kind of influence and talent business. There was a study that just came out very recently, like yesterday or whatever, and it would surprise nobody. But it was the question of like the top 10 jobs that kids want these days when they ask what they want. Yeah. And it's everything you would hate to see on a list. It's YouTuber, pro gamer – influencer, Instagram model, TikTok star, like not a single one was like a doctor or whatever. I think one might have been firefighter, and that's all you got. Mm-hmm. One, completely understandable. That's all of our entertainment these days. My kids are teenagers. One's in the first year of high school. The other just finished high school, and they were raised liking people. Mm-hmm. Who only were alive in the land of places like YouTube and Instagram.
Right.
But two, what's that business world like and where does it go? Like, you know, this is your business. You run a talent group where you convince nice companies to pay for your people to put a can of food next to their butt or something.
Yeah.
Like what's that business?
You know, I think what you bring up is so interesting. I just want to touch on there's a bit of nuance to what you're talking about, because it's true. And this has actually been the case for a couple of years now that the reporting of especially middle-aged school children are moving more towards, I want to be a YouTube star versus firefighter, astronaut, lawyer, doctor, whatever. And that's because of the, especially in America, the consumption of digital is so much higher than anywhere else in the world, you know, outside of China. So if we're sitting there on our screens and we're seeing people make money and do really exciting things, you know, where we're spending our time and where our kids are spending our time, then of course, as you already, you know, referenced, it's natural that we're going to start to look this way. What that means to me is that if we want to start, if, you know, for our generation, my generation, your generation, because I did grow up in the generation of like doctor, lawyer, et cetera. That's, you know, those expectations were out there. If we want to move things back that way or include a lot more of those job titles again, the funny thing is that we need to see that modeled across social media. And it's a little weird to say, but we need to see the firefighter social media people, the doctors. Actually, there's been an explosion in doctors and nurses across social media, you know, especially as the pandemic hit, you know, our online digital heroes, the doctors that are telling the stories, but sharing what's going on, you know, due to the pandemic from their phones in the ER and whatnot. So there's an explosion of interest in being a doctor again, a nurse again. But then, you know, in order to get those other categories that we're really used to and that we valued as a society, you know, years ago, now those people have to be digital. The astronaut, we got to make astronauts and space super digital so that it's in front of kids. So it's interesting because, you know, to get to your the nut of your question, like, what's that like to own an agency in this space? Well, for me, it's infinite possibility because as we continue, as this space continues to get bigger and grow, more and more personalities are emerging that are exciting and you want to hear their stories. You want to support them as they become these sensations online. And that's what my agency's here for. Of course, you know, to find, link them up with sponsors so that they can keep growing and creating their content. But telling their personal stories is really like what makes influence or digital talent so compelling. It's these personal stories. So I think everybody's going to be an influencer at some level one day, you know, unless you opt out. And that's totally, totally cool too. If you kind of opt out and don't get on social media ever, then that's fine. But there's space for everybody's story on social media.
We grabbed a firefighter influencer who is on Instagram because he had an incredible story. His name is Ed Kransky. And I'll show you a little bit about what he did. Yeah. So you've probably seen this one around. Mm-hmm. He was talking about deadlifting. So what's that? 5 times 9, 450. That's 495. He's pulling on that thing right there.
Oh,
1, 2, 3, 4, 5. Yeah. So he said, though, he goes, you know, the hardest part of that deadlift, he goes, I could have done 10 of those because he, of course, wants to brag. You know, he's super mighty. Right. He goes, the hardest part was setting those things on fire. It turns out iron doesn't burn. So you have to do something about that. So he took a whole bunch of sponges, soaked them in gasoline, and then ran them in between all the plates. So that's how you get it to burn. So there you go. There's your Instagram firefighter. Yeah. But that's what they're going to have to do, I guess. Hey, sorry to see you go, Deb, but thanks for coming by. Kyle, if you don't mind, I'm going to grab Gracie back. We're going to talk a little bit together. So
awesome.
Gracie, you didn't get a whole lot of backstage time. Sorry. I hope you got a chance to try some of the hors d'oeuvres. You know, they're brought in from very interesting.
They were amazing. Food. Thank you. Best hors d'oeuvres ever.
Yep. We have a big thing around here. We like Viking food. So, you know, there's always something you can try out. As you were hearing Kyle and as Kyle was hearing you, you both had a lot of head nodding going on. So I'm just curious for just even first impressions, Gracie, from hearing some of the story.
First impression was I got on my phone and I follow Kyle on Instagram because I'm like, I need to
follow each other back. Be in touch.
Yeah, I love it. You know, especially too, you know, we're in this day and age where social media is so big. You know, I remember when Facebook started, you know, it was shortly after I graduated from high school and I was like, oh yeah. It's so important for us to be able to take advantage of these platforms in meaningful and powerful ways. And that's where, you know, personally for me, I move a lot of my business as well into that space and dropping, you know, advice and nuggets for people just to pick up because we're constantly indebted in our social media. We're constantly in our feeds. And so there's a lot of shit out there. If we can put some positivity and we can put some, you know, if we can drop some nuggets that is going to also increase inclusion and equity in our lives, I'm all about it. So I love, to your point, you know, we prioritize, Kyle, we often prioritize what we're seeing in our social feeds. And it's important that what we contribute to our feeds is also how we want to contribute into our society as well.
One thing I like to note is that you both had the situation where you have personal stuff in there. Like I got a chance to see Teddy. But then of course you have really important statements like this one. And similar with Kyle, Kyle has important things. And I also got to see Milk Cookies and Cookie Monster, which is an incredible pairing as far as putting together a
costumes.
Great costume pick. So I guess one curious question I have is that people don't always think about it that way. People don't always think that they should mix and match their business and their life. You both made that choice. What was the thought process there, Kyle, especially for you, where you run talent and all that?
Well, for me, I was already on social media anyways, you know, just as a personal, I've always kind of struggled with that. Like, do I be the consummate professional, the CEO who's not really on social because I don't want to divide my audience and give them too much, or like say something about diversity or say something about politics that's going to divide, you know, the money that can come into my firm. But it's important for people to know. I feel like it's important for people to know who I am, what I represent, what I stand for. My family's a big part of that. My wife is a big, you know, influencer. She was my first client. So whether she's on my feed doesn't matter. I'm going to end up on her feed, and same with our son. So it's just, you know, I don't know. I like people to know a little bit about who I am behind the scenes, because it's really indicative of how I manage my company and things like that.
Interesting. All right. Which one of you I want to know, claims Jen Baker. Because she's
very that's my friend. We've been friends since elementary school. So thanks, Jen. Thanks for tuning in. She's awesome. And to answer your question, Chris, about the social media, for me, a lot of what I talk about in my business as well is authenticity and having the power to be your authentic self, to show up as who you are, as in the workplace and in other environments, to ensure that you have the opportunity to reach your potential. You can't reach your potential if you aren't authentic. And if you aren't authentic with yourself, you're not going to be able to have true connections with others. Right. And so for me, that's why I'm very transparent on my social, from St. Patty's Day drinks to tips and advice, to my puppy, to, you know, hanging out with friends, because I want people to know who I am, not just as a professional, but also as an individual, because all of those are aspects of me that I want to convey with the world.
I think it matters too that people get to see, you know, who you are and how you represent. You know, who you are becomes a model for who other people can be and what connects them as they see, you know, I'm the kind of person, I'm like Kyle, I want to have my life and run my business, or I'm like Gracie, I want to be, you know, sipping delicious cocktails in one picture and, you know, changing the planet in another picture. So you know, I think that it becomes the part of it. It's you got to be Clark Kent and Superman for the rest of your life.
I like that.
That's yes. Good. Yes.
Seems like it. So a lot of times people are accidentally disabused of the realization that they can run whatever business they want to run, however they want to run it. And sometimes it's going to go better or not for them, you know, but other times it's a really good opportunity for people to see what matters. I want to know what advice you give to people for how to configure their business their way, and where do you warn them? Where, you know, how much is still kind of coded language and all that? How much of that is, how much do you have to keep from people, et cetera? And how do you advise people? I guess I'll start with Gracie and then Kyle, especially you, who has such a flock of humans that you interact with over there.
So for me, and how I conduct my business is, you know, yeah, I'm professional, but I'm also real. And what's important for my clients and I is that I meet them where they're at. Everyone, especially in DEI work, we're coming from all different places and we have all different motives. Sometimes I'm working with organizations that are invested in this work because they're trying to prevent a lawsuit. Other times it's because they've already had a lawsuit and now, right, as part of the agreement, they have to do this work. Others, it's for numbers and hiring. Others, it's for, it does contribute towards the bottom line and to increase their audience or customer base. But wherever they're coming at, wherever they're coming from, I have to meet them there. And then also tie in, like what I said earlier, tie in the importance and prioritization of diversity, equity, and inclusion into their mission or into their bottom line. And we can get there. We can get there from anywhere. But when I meet them where they are, then they know that they're safe. I know it's scary. Deb, I love your comment. She says it's harder to show up as you are if the culture or people around you aren't very receptive. Show up as you are nonetheless. I love that. Yes, Deb, that's so true. But in order for us, in order for others to be receptive, we have to meet them where they are. instead of having our expectations being put on them. And when we meet them there, that's how we can be more safe. That's how we can be more equitable. That's how we can progress further together.
Kyle, you have 8,074 clients, you know, give or take, as far as talent influence goes. These people are navigating a world that their parents don't know anything about, that, you know, their friends haven't had anything to do with. How do we talk about this? How do we cover that?
Talking about it with your parents?
No. how do we show them to show up who they are and how they want to be? And how do you start to show them that they can have the business that they want to have their way, with a few caveats?
Well, I think, you know, for me, what the interesting thing for me was, like, I come from the corporate world. I used to wear suits and ties every day. And when you're in the corporate world, or you, especially in office culture, which is like, we're so far away from office culture now, that especially with the pandemic and being in my home, we don't have to worry about it as much. But you get used to this like structure of like what you can talk about, what you can't talk about, and how you're supposed to like ascend to the top, right? And when I started my own agency, I just wanted to buck that. I'm not really into, you know, all the bureaucracy that you find inherent in office life and politics within your corporate culture. It just never really sat well with me. I love having like a family feel, a family environment. I like to really, especially with influencer talent, you get to know so much about these individuals because you're following them. You're seeing them live out their lives online. So how could you not have an agency that models that and says, okay, cool, we're kind of like a family, you know, and our staff, we treat them like a family. We treat everybody with respect. We bring them to the table. We have arguments and differences of opinion, but we work it out. And we have that with the talent too, because we're all trying to figure out how to move the right way together. But just like a family, you've got to like, you're going to have your highs and lows of that. So I think our space gives a lot more space for those kinds of conversations and that kind of like way of running things. It's very different than Hollywood, and how I think probably your viewers or listeners would think about talent agents in Hollywood. And, you know, we're used to seeing things like Entourage and Lamborghinis and drugs. It's a very different vibe what we've been able to create. And, you know, I think our clients are really receptive and they're happy with how we've been able to move. Oh, got the cat. Cat attack.
I told you it could happen.
I was waiting
for you it could happen. To go off.
Hey, Chris, buddy. Feline invasion coming your way. Hit the floor, man.
I knew it was coming.
Oh, that's great.
But yeah, you know, it's like it's been great. You know, it's I really get edified by our clients out there from these brands and agencies that love the way that we do business, that's respectful of what their needs are and what our talents needs are. Right. And me just being some Hollywood big ego saying you got to do it this way with two middle fingers up, you know. It's like I'm excited to be a part of this new wave and be able to build my own company. That's a new wave, a new, you know, way of doing business.
It's a thing of beauty. All right, we're getting close to the end of the show, so I've got two things to do before I cast all out of here.
Oh, and here's our person of the day. Kaboom!
You know, I don't think Deb Lee's had it just lately, so I'm going to give it to Deb. She had some good talks, and she's always here for some talk like this. So you win, Deb. You are entitled to an apple. Just go out and buy yourself an apple, and it's completely free. Make sure you wash it before you eat it. So we're at the part of the show where I ask every single guest that's ever been here, 5-time beatboxing champion, Butterscotch, Michael Irby, the guy who starred in Mayans Motorcycle Club TV show, all kinds of people. What goes in your backpack? Sister Ann Flanagan, Daughters of St. Paul. What goes in your backpack? So the question is, it could be something physical. It could be something metaphorical. It could be something like an extra set of teeth. It could be something like kindness. I will start with Gracie. Gracie, what goes in your backpack?
Well, for my backpack, I would pack resilience. My journey has not been easy. I'm from the Congo, wasn't supposed to be here, wasn't supposed to live. Miraculously, I survived. I moved to the United States when I was a young kid, and, you know, have battled through various adversities from, you know, living as a Black female immigrant in a very homogenous world. I'm also LGBTQ. So identifying as queer and very straight spaces, I've had so much thrown at me. And so the one thing that has gotten me through everything is resiliency. And resiliency is the greatest act of overcoming adversity and the greatest power of not giving up.
there's so much to bite into. It's almost like another whole episode, Gracie. That's what I think. So, you know, maybe we'll talk Congo next time and dig in even more, because one thing we love to do with the show is have you back. So swing back again. Kyle Yemseth, what goes into the backpack?
The backpack's going to have Euros in it, but it's going to have Euros because I think, you know, just for me, it's a great like show of the fact that like we're in this digital age. You know, I can work from anywhere on the planet, and I love taking that time and encouraging, like, all of my staff, they're all over the country. Our influencers and talent are all over the world. Like, that's just the future. So I got Euros in my backpack because I'm going to keep doing work, but I'm going to do it from where I love to be.
Good. Well, so then where's the place? Like, are we waiting for things to open up? And if so,
yeah, absolutely. My wife,
where are we going?
We're going to the south of France. Just, I'm going to be sitting there making deals happen, and it's going to be beautiful. And yeah.
Well, isn't that just Nice? It's nice. Yeah. I was terrible. You know, my grandmother had a secret move she would do. If I made a bad joke or if I was saying something inappropriate, there's a spot right under your elbow. And if you don't know it's there, you don't know it's there. But let me tell you what she would do. If I said the wrong thing,